This spot is brought to you by Eaton Vance, the symbol of advanced investing. What's inside your ETF? With Eaton Vance High Yield ETF, you know. Inside, you'll find smart bond selection from a specialized team with deep fixed income expertise. Get to know what's inside EVHY, the symbol of high yield done right, at eatonvance.com/symbols. Before investing, prospective investors should carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. The current prospectus contains this and other information and is available at eatonvance.com. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Not FDIC insured. Offer no bank guarantee. May lose value. Not insured by any federal government agency. Not a deposit. Investments involve risk. Principal loss is possible. Distributed by Foreside Fund Services, LLC.
Detained Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich appears in a Moscow court. Plus, China's economy rebounds after 3 years of zero COVID isolation.
Starting at the beginning of this year, things have gotten a lot better. And, you know, it's a slow kind of crawl back because the damage to the service sector was so intense. But it's clearly now rebounding quite strongly and making up for lost ground.
And Russia finds eager trading partners in the Persian Gulf.
You're the UAE and you are Saudi and you buy Russian oil products on the cheap and you sell more of that product more expensively at a premium to Europe.
It's Tuesday, April 18th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. And here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. A court in Moscow is hearing an appeal today of the detention of jailed Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich. Gershkovich was arrested in Russia last month on an espionage allegation that the Journal and the U.S. government vehemently deny. And joining me now with the latest on today's hearing is Wall Street Journal World Coverage Chief Gordon Fairclough. The details are obviously still trickling in at this hour, Gordon, though we do know Evan appeared in court and was wearing a blue checkered shirt and jeans. But beyond that, what is the broader significance of this hearing today?
Effectively, it's a bail hearing, so the judge is being asked to decide whether he should remain in the Lefortovo prison, where he's been held up to this point, or put into house arrest, or effectively freed on bail pending any judicial proceedings.
That sounds pretty consequential for what Evan's life is going to look like the next few months.
It certainly will say a lot about his quality of life, but we have very little insight into what's happening actually in the courtroom.
On that point, do we know how open today's hearing has been? You know, access to Evan has been something we've been monitoring really closely.
So the court today announced that the hearing would be closed. We did see the U.S. ambassador go into the courthouse earlier today. We don't know if she'll be able to be in the courtroom for the hearing.
That was Wall Street Journal World Coverage Chief Gordon Fairclough. Gordon, thank you.
Thanks.
Meanwhile, Russian President Vladimir Putin has made a rare visit to Russian-occupied areas of Ukraine. Putin met with military commanders in Ukraine's Kherson and Luhansk regions, which are partly occupied by Russian forces. And while the exact date of the visit wasn't clear, the trip comes as Ukraine is preparing for an offensive that aims to push Russian forces out of occupied land. A heavyweight defamation battle pitting Dominion Voting Systems and Fox News is scheduled to go to trial today. Jurors are set to begin considering whether Fox News and Fox Business defamed Dominion in a series of broadcasts airing false claims by associates of Donald Trump that the voting machine company helped to rig the 2020 election in favor of Joe Biden. Both sides face legal risks if the case goes to trial, though any last-minute settlement talks would need to overcome 2 years of intense legal hostilities that so far have put an agreement out of reach. Wall Street Journal National Legal Affairs reporter Aaron Mulvaney says that Dominion is coming to court armed with reams of internal Fox communications.
Dominion is hoping to show that from the top down, throughout the chain of command at Fox, there was a financial motive to air false claims about election fraud, Dominion specifically. A lot of personalities will eventually be expected to testify that I think are recognizable names. And so that's why this is being closely watched. It will be very interesting to see who testifies. That has been a very contentious part. From Fox's point of view, they believe a lot of the communications is clutter and cherry-picked. So they'll fight very hard to keep some of the witnesses' testimony that we have seen in the press, things from some of the top executives and on-air hosts out of the case and keep it very narrow.
And we should note that Fox News parent Fox Corp and Wall Street Journal parent News Corp share common ownership. China's economy is showing fresh signs of life. First quarter GDP data released today showed growth of 4.5% compared to the same 3 months a year ago, topping economists' expectations. Chinese retail sales also jumped more than 10% in March from a year earlier as restrictions on daily life eased. Journal Heard on the Street Asia editor Nathaniel Taplin says that China's reopening is a bright spot amid a generally downbeat outlook for the global economy, though it could take time for the rest of the world to benefit.
Right now, the rebound is concentrated in consumption, but also especially services, right? So that tends to be domestically focused things like domestic travel, restaurants, services in China. So kind of the knock-on effect of that for the rest of the world right now is maybe not quite as intense as it might be. I think what will be interesting to see is probably in the second half of the year, once the real estate sector starts recovering a bit more firmly, you might, you know, start to see more kind of pressure on commodity prices and especially oil.
Coming up, Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates are scooping up Russian oil products at steep discounts. We'll look at how the petroleum-rich countries hope to benefit from that trade after the break.
This spot is brought to you by Eaton Vance, the symbol of advanced investing. What's inside your ETF? With Eaton Vance High Yield ETF, you know. Inside, you'll find smart bond selection from a specialized team with deep fixed income expertise. Get to know what's inside EVHY, the symbol of high yield done right, at eatonvance.com/symbols. Before investing, prospective investors should carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. The current prospectus contains this and other information and is available at eatonvance.com. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Not FDIC insured. Offer no bank guarantee. May lose value. Not insured by any federal government agency. Not a deposit. Investments involve risk. Principal loss is possible. Distributed by Foreside Fund Services, LLC.
Russia has been scouring the globe lately to find buyers for its energy products. Western sanctions have cut Russia off from many of its established trading partners, but Moscow is now finding eager new ones in the Persian Gulf. Despite U.S. objections, some of the most oil-rich countries are now buying up Russian oil, and Wall Street Journal Middle East correspondent Benoit Faucon joins me now with the latest on this story. Benoit, let's get into the details here straight away. Which countries exactly are buying what products from Russia and in what amounts?
Yes, it's effectively mostly the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia buying mostly refined products, especially from state-run giant Rosneft in Russia, and then basically reselling, you know, their own products to European markets at a premium.
Got it. I mean, these are countries that have big oil reservoirs. Why do they need this in the first place?
Well, yeah, that's kind of a wonderful arbitrage, right? You're the UAE and you are Saudi and you buy Russian oil products on the cheap, which you know, very often you would use basically for your own domestic consumption, for your, you know, your own motorists. And what you do is that means you don't have to use as much as your own products, you know, products that you refine in your own refineries as the UAE and Emirates. And you sell more of that product more expensively at a premium to Europe.
Benoit, just how valuable is this trade overall? And how valuable is this for Russia in particular at this moment in time?
Well, that's the thing. You could argue sanctions are working, right? Because it's not disrupting the oil flows the way it has, for instance, when there were sanctions on Iranian oil. So you still have Russian oil flowing, either as crude or as refined product, but it's flowing on the cheap. So that means the Russian government is still being hurt. And in a way, U.S. allies, even though they're kind of acting independently for their own self-interest here, are making big bucks out of the sanctions.
What has the American reaction been to this?
So you have really two trends, and not necessarily conflicting each other. One is sanctions are working because they're hurting Russian coffers. So, you know, great. On the other hand, you know, you have other US officials who see as problematic the fact that, you know, there's so much closeness and so much trade with especially the UAE, but also Saudi Arabia, and also are really scrutinizing, you know, all these entities that are working sort of as go-between and also making money. And some of these entities are obviously connected to Russian interests. So it's a mixed reaction, but I would say overall, the conclusion for the US is that sanctions are working. They're hurting Russia.
Okay, so the US focus is on the intermediaries. But are we not seeing some broader pattern here, Benoit, of Gulf states maybe sort of turning away from taking direction from the United States, whether it is economically, politically, diplomatically? Does this fit into a larger trend?
Exactly. So on one hand, the idea was don't disrupt the oil flows from Russia, but hurt their revenue. But there is a limit to that if you basically see, let's say, an entire region of the world, which would be effectively Eurasia, you know, from China to Russia to the Middle East, aligning with Russia. So especially in the conflict. Now, that's not happened formally. It's been mostly abstentions in UN votes that we've seen, for instance, from the UAE. But you have sort of a relationship that is deepening between the UAE and the Saudis. And that's part of the broad unease. So, you know, stage one, sanctions are working. We have the result. But, you know, if it goes too far and you have a full integration, or sort of a deeper integration economically between the Saudi, the UAE and the Russian, that's where you're going to have a shift in the response from the US. I mean, the US has already lobbied the UAE, especially against getting too close economically with Russia. So that could really trigger more alarm bells if it expands.
That was Wall Street Journal Middle East correspondent Benoit Faucon. Benoit, thank you so much for the update.
Yeah, thank you.
And we should note that the Saudi Royal Court and Rosneft didn't return request for comment on this story. And an Emirati official said that the country abides by UN sanctions and has, quote, robust processes in place to deal with sanctioned entities. That official said the UAE will continue to trade openly and honestly with its international partners. In other news today, a survey conducted by asset manager BlackRock shows that investor appetite for private equity remains strong even as interest rates climb. BlackRock's survey, which was carried out between October 2022 and January 2023, found that more than 70% of roughly 200 institutional investors plan to put more money into private equity this year, and more than half expect to increase allocations to private credit. Teamsters and transportation giant UPS are kicking off contract negotiations this week on the largest collective bargaining agreement in the United States. Part-timers and weekend drivers are expected to be at the heart of the debate. The national talks held in Washington will see both sides bring proposals on how to update their current contract, which expires at the end of July. In the new five-year deal, UPS says it wants more flexibility to have employees work during the weekends in response to customers wanting deliveries any day of the week. Meanwhile, the Teamsters Union wants UPS to raise the pay for part-timers and do away with a second category of drivers to handle weekend deliveries. And it's tax day in the U.S., the deadline for filing your 2022 returns. If you haven't done that already, you will likely need to request an extension, though we've got some good news if you're now adding Call the IRS to your to-do list. The tax agency says that wait times for live telephone assistance have fallen to 4 minutes compared to 27 minutes a year ago. The number of dropped calls has also dropped, though IRS watchdogs say that the agency should be measuring whether taxpayers get their problems resolved, not just whether the IRS picks up. And if you're still navigating your return or need to request an extension, we've left a link to our last-minute tax guide for procrastinators in our show notes. And on deck today, it's a big one for corporate earnings with the likes of Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Johnson & Johnson, Netflix, and United Airlines all set to report their quarterly results. And finally,
I think we all can picture the experience of receiving a package from Amazon, Walmart, whoever. Think office supplies, a box of pens, a book, and having that come in a box that is many, many times the size so that you get it on your doorstep and you think, what did I order?
That's Liz Young, a reporter with the Wall Street Journal's Logistics Report, and we've all been there, shaking that huge box, trying to figure out what little object might be inside. And Liz says things were delivered like this for a long time, with shippers sometimes tossing in packing peanuts or bubble wrap for protection, but that still left them shipping a lot of air, or what in industry speak they call void fill. However, shippers are now rolling out a new generation of packaging machine that's capable of cranking out hundreds of made-to-fit boxes every hour. And between reducing cardboard waste and emissions to cutting the costs of driving or flying air around the world, Liz says those machines are catching on.
These machines take in dimensions that are inputted and then make the box. They use bulk corrugated cardboard, and they are able to cut the cardboard, glue the cardboard. They even label and seal the packages. And so this is also beneficial to companies that are looking to fill labor gaps because there's been a shortage of warehouse workers. This is one more task they can kind of take away from needing workers for. Companies like Amazon and Walmart are also saying that this is better for the end customer because instead of having to deal with all of this abundance of cardboard, all of this abundance of packaging material, it makes the customer experience better to be able to just open a box that's the size of the book they ordered.
And that's What's News for Tuesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.